Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. As part of their jobs, members of Congress often learn information before the rest of us, and often that pertains to the ups and downs of the economy and of business sectors as well as specific businesses. Benefiting from that information by buying and selling stocks would constitute insider trading. To prevent that, Congress voted into law the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act, the STOCK Act. Trouble is, the law doesn't seem to have any teeth, or if it does, it continues to be ignored by some members of Congress. Most recently, North Carolina Republican Dan Bishop from Mecklenburg County became the latest to violate the STOCK Act by failing to properly disclose purchasing up to $5 million in U.S. Treasury notes, according to a Raw Story analysis. So today, a closer look at the STOCK Act, why it came to be, why it appears to be so weak, and what the implications of successfully evading that law are for members of Congress and for the rest of us. Joining us to talk about that is Alexandria Jacobson, a reporter with the aforementioned investigative news service, Raw Story. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. Dr. Eric Heberlig is also with us, a professor of political science at UNC Charlotte. Welcome back.
Morning, Mike.
Morning. And Kedrick Payne is vice president and general counsel, also senior director of ethics for the Campaign Legal Center. Kedrick, thank you for being here as well.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're welcome. Alexandria, let me start with you. First of all, for those who don't know, Raw Story is an investigative website focused on bringing underreported news to light. Are these violations of the STOCK Act by members of Congress one of those underreported stories? And if so, why?
Absolutely. So we've been seeing in recent years, actually, that more and more members of Congress are violating the STOCK Act. So this is something that has started to gain more attention recently, but is definitely an area that us at Raw Story are looking at much more closely. There are financial paperwork that legislators file that many people don't actually look at. And that's where we've found that these violations are occurring, where oftentimes legislators are not disclosing their purchases and sales of stocks on time. And those are violations of the law.
For a congressperson to violate a law that they and their colleagues, maybe their past colleagues, passed, seems to be relatively egregious and alarming. So why are mainstream publications and the mainstream media outlets ignoring this pretty much?
Yeah, so this unfortunately, there are minimal consequences for violating the STOCK Act. So it might not make it to the big main outlets because there really aren't big consequences. So if someone violates the STOCK Act, at worst, they're getting a $200 fine. So if you are trading stocks in the millions of dollar ranges, $200 isn't that big of a deal. No one's losing their job. So oftentimes, it doesn't seem like a big deal, and other outlets aren't paying attention to this. But it is a big deal because this is an ethical consideration.
I'm glad you brought up the ethics of it. That's why Kedrick Payne is with us. That's his business ethics. Even in the absence of this STOCK Act, even if it didn't exist, it seems to me that benefiting personally from knowledge you gain through private meetings in Congress or even public meetings in Congress that you gain information about because you're getting the brief before anybody else seems to be a violation of ethics on its face. Is it, Kedrick?
It is. It is a violation of ethics on its face if you are making these trades with information that you learn while in Congress. But more importantly, is the ethical standard is that you don't want to have the appearance of a conflict of interest. So the criminal law covers the true insider trading, but ethics goes further because we know that the public loses confidence in its government if it has just the perception that lawmakers are putting their own personal interests ahead of the public interest.
You're the expert in politics, Eric. That doesn't seem to bother a lot of these folks. Why not?
Well, I think it does, but we have a general problem of accountability in elections, and that many of our districts are safe. There aren't competitive elections, so other than the media, which, as Alexandra just pointed out, isn't really focused on this, there aren't challengers to bring the public's attention to any violations of these laws. So if there aren't any consequences, either in terms of fine or jail term or risk in election, it's going to be low priority for public officials to do what they're supposed to do. And, you know, this is just one of many things that are on their plate during a day, and it's probably not likely to be their highest priority.
So let's back up a bit, Alexandra. Assuming that I adequately and accurately explained the Stock Act, why did it come into being? Why did Congress decide itself to regulate itself with the Stock Act?
So the Stock Act was signed by President Barack Obama back in 2012, and this came about at a time when there were a lot of concerns about insider trading, which still exists today. And, you know, so much to the, you know, in extreme cases, people day trading on Capitol Hill. So there was a 60 Minutes segment back in 2011 that brought a lot of attention to this. And so given these concerns about conflicts of interest, there was a bipartisan effort to enact the Stock Act, which would require these disclosures just for more public transparency to try to point out these conflicts of interest.
So Congress members stepped up to the plate, passed this act to restrict their activities and maybe strengthen what appears to be ethics violations. What impact has it had? Because clearly there are still violations of this going on. What kind of impact has it had?
Yeah. So the Stock Act, you know, it seemed to be working fairly well for a little bit, but as we've seen in recent years, there's just been continuous violations of the act. Insider reported more than 78 members of Congress had potential violations of the Stock Act. So it is mostly, I'd say the Stock Act has been a public service in providing transparency, informing the public about these conflicts of interest. And it has prompted current legislators to introduce new legislation that would strengthen the Stock Act, provide stronger consequences going forward if legislation were to be passed that would completely ban stock trading.
As usual, I am the oldest person on this program this morning, and those of us of a certain age were raised to believe that our elected officials in America were honest and trustworthy and ethical, et cetera. And clearly that was either a naive point of view or the ethical nature of the people we are electing has degraded over time, because we're finding out more and more of these lapses seem to be regular events. So with or without this act, Kedrick, do elected officials not care? Do they not understand what this looks like when these allegations of insider trading and other lapses of the Stock Act come to light?
From what has been reported, it looks like they do understand the public concern, because there's polling that shows that the majority of Americans would like a ban on congressional stock trading. But it puts these members in a hard place where do they choose their financial holdings over the public interest in some change, but not until there is going to be a larger momentum of a public push to change this, as what occurred in 2011 with the 60 Minutes segment that Alexandria mentioned. The lawmakers are not forced to make this hard choice.
So put these, I think you said, what, 78 violations? Is that what you said, Alexandria, over the course of how many years?
That was at least 78, and that was during the 117th Congress, so from 2021 to 2022.
So there are hundreds of members of Congress. Put that number into some sort of perspective. Can we easily say then that the majority of Congress people are following this law?
So there's some additional research from Insider that says 1 in 10 members of Congress have violated the Stock Act. At Raw Story, we've identified and broken the news not only of Representative Bishop, but a handful of other Congress folks that have broken the Stock Act. So I'd say a significant number of members of Congress have conducted violations of the act.
Eric,
Mike, I would like to just comment so that even if members comply with this law, you still have a problem. So there are members who comply with this law and they report the trades and stocks, but then you clearly see that they've traded stock in companies on which they have oversight. So then you still have this chipping away of the public's confidence in their elected officials.
Which is a major problem, which we're going to talk about, because it's not just evading this law. It's also engaging in practices that apparently are still legal, but maybe ought not be legal. Eric, you're not a lawyer, I know that, but you're a political scientist. But most of the members of Congress, I think, are lawyers. And if you're breaking a law as a lawyer, does that not put your law license in jeopardy?
Perhaps, but I think the real risk for them, as they see it, is really the electoral consequences. That if people don't see them as trustworthy as a representative, those voters are not likely to support them for re-election. So I think the challenges that we're pointing out are really twofold. One is the reporting requirements and whether they're kind of following the law technically in terms of what they have to report. But the larger issue is that the law was passed not really to get them to report per se, but to get them to stop trading on based on insider information and taking advantage of the information that they have access to as public officials that the normal investors don't have. And I think as it's been pointed out, even if you report things accurately and thus are not violating that aspect of the law, if you still are using insider information, that's the problem. That's you're cashing in on your self-interest and your position rather than using the information you have to appropriately decide on laws and regulate the companies on behalf of the American citizens.
I mentioned Dan Bishop at the beginning of this because he's the latest person evidently to have been in violation of this. And you can look at what he did and we'll talk about what he allegedly did in a little while. And it doesn't seem all that egregious. It's not like he stamped on the law with combat boots. He inadvertently says that he merely forgot to file information about a stock trade or a treasury trade on time. But you say, Eric, that that's kind of interesting because this is a man from North Carolina, started out here on the local city council or county commission, I've forgotten which, went to the legislature and then went to Congress. And now he says he might run for state attorney general. And yet here he is breaking a law. What about that has captured your attention?
Yeah, so I think given the safe district that Dan Bishop represents, there's little risk to him in this violation in a Republican primary or a general election in the 8th District of North Carolina. But there's a widespread speculation that he's planning to run for attorney general in North Carolina. And voters hold different expectations of different jobs. And attorney general, being the chief law enforcement officer of North Carolina, I suspect their standards for have you ever violated any law is going to matter more there than running for re-election for Congress. And it's going to be a competitive statewide race. So you're going to have other candidates with the ability to run ads pointing out this violation and arguing that people should hold him to account for it. So even if there's a legitimate reason that he has, that he didn't really intend to violate the law, there's more likelihood that this is going to play a campaign role than were he to stay in a safe congressional seat.
Kedrick, I have 20 seconds. Put this into perspective, and we'll talk more about what he did or is alleged to have done. But is this like, this is not like shooting somebody on Fifth Avenue. This is more like running a stop sign or speeding, correct?
It's failure to report on time without more evidence of a intent to hide it would just be a simple de minimis violation.
Okay, we'll come back, talk more about this and many other things in a moment in Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Stock Act that Congress passed to regulate its own activities in terms of trading stocks and other investment opportunities. Alexandria Jacobson has reported almost exclusively, but certainly extensively, on this in Raw Story. She's a reporter for that organization. Kedrick Payne is with us. He's Vice President, General Counsel, and Senior Director of Ethics at the Campaign Legal Center. And Dr. Eric Heberlig is a professor of political science at UNC Charlotte. I'm sure, Kedrick. I have a note to myself that says Rich. We'll talk about that in a second. But Kedrick, I'm sure that when members of Congress come in for the first time, or even when they're coming back for another term, they're given the rules of the road, aren't they? Are they informed of the Stock Act? Are they told what they can and cannot do when it comes with regard to that? Or is this something they just need to have general knowledge of?
Now, each member has mandatory training, which includes a Stock Act. There's a huge focus on their financial disclosures. Stock Act, stock transactions is a big part of that. And then because of the public reporting on these failures to comply with the Stock Act and insider trading, it is fair to say all lawmakers are familiar with this rule.
It's human nature. This is where the Rich note comes from. It's human nature to want to improve your lot in life and certainly guard yourself from any kind of misfortune. Alexandria, a lot of these folks are rich going in, and if they're not rich coming in, a lot of them are richer coming out for whatever reason, and maybe this plays a role. But is this opportunity to either protect yourself or enrich yourself what makes this law so difficult for these folks to follow?
I think so. I think that's pretty much it. I think in theory, it shouldn't be that hard to follow. As Kedrick mentioned, they're given very clear instructions on the transparency that's required as a part of the Stock Act. And I think many members of Congress do have very large financial stocks, financial holdings that they have invested interest in, and they are committed and want to continue to still to exercise their ability to trade and make financial transactions.
So this law has been in place for about 10 years now. And in that time, no member of Congress has been publicly disciplined for violating the act. Kedrick, have they been disciplined behind the scenes in any way? Have they had their hands slapped?
It does not seem that they've had any consequence beyond the $200 of fee. But I will point out that the Office of Congressional Ethics has conducted investigations into this, and their public findings show, at least in one case, that there is substantial reason to believe that there was trading on confidential information by a member of Congress, but nothing happened to that member of Congress.
There is some question about the strength of the ethics committees in both houses of Congress. Before leaving office, Eric, former North Carolina Republican Senator Richard Burr was investigated by the Justice Department for charges of possible insider trading. Those charges were dropped. From what we know about what he allegedly did and with what he was charged, is this another example of special treatment for elected officials, or is there simply no there?
Well, the specific case was at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, as the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He had access to information on what was likely coming before the public did, and made a number of trades in the healthcare industry that certainly looked like he was taking advantage of that information. So whether there were technical violations of the law or not, I mean, I'll have to defer to the Justice Department on that. But certainly when I talked to community groups about it, this was something that people in North Carolina were aware of. It really caused distrust in them, not just about Senator Burr specifically, but their suspicions that other politicians are doing this consistently and really cashing in on that type of inside access that they have. And that's really the entire purpose of this Stock Act, to try to make sure that public officials are acting in the public interest rather than using their access and leverage over these industries to pad their own bank accounts.
Kedrick.
Yeah, I'll agree exactly what Eric just said, and just add that I was a former investigator at the Office of Congressional Ethics about 10 years ago when I was involved in an investigation of insider trading that was sparked as a result of that 60 Minutes story. And it is impossible to, well, I shouldn't say impossible, but it's nearly impossible to prove a case like that. So Senator Burr may not have received special treatment, but as Eric pointed out, the damage to public trust still exists.
Kedrick, you say that the Stock Act's biggest failure has been that it banned insider trading without restricting lawmakers from owning stock, including in companies that appear before its committees. Was that an oversight or was that deliberate?
I think it's the natural progression of ethics laws where they just have to get better. So before the Stock Act, we only had the disclosure of stocks annually. And then we realized, okay, we need to have the stocks transactions disclosed quicker. Now that we have that, now we see, okay, this is a big problem. We have the data to show that this is a problem. And now the next step would be to ban it. So I don't necessarily think that it was intentional, but I think that now we have the data to do more.
So, Alexandria, you reported, getting back to local politicians, you reported that North Carolina Republican Dan Bishop violated the Stock Act by failing to properly disclose purchasing up to $5 million in Treasury notes. For those who don't know, aren't they just savings bonds?
Yes. Yes.
$5 million in savings. Oh, I don't know why you want to park $5 million in savings bonds, but okay. he reported it, but he allegedly did it late, 3 months past the deadline. That's not necessarily insider trading, I don't suppose, but apparently it's a violation of the rules. What are the rules?
Absolutely. So the Stock Act requires that Congress people fill out what are called periodic transaction reports for every time that they purchase or sell stocks, bonds, treasury securities, cryptocurrency, and they must disclose that within 45 days. So with Representative Bishop, he bought those treasury notes at the end of December 2022 and didn't disclose them until earlier this month. So that made him a few months past that 45-day
deadline. Has he explained why he took so long to disclose it?
So he actually said it was a human error. He said that he left it in drafts when trying to submit the report initially back in December. So that's what his team told us.
So these are treasury notes, savings bonds, based on the full faith and credit of the United States of America. They are not stocks that rise and fall on the whims of the stock market or the fortunes of private companies. But Kedrick, isn't the principle here the same? As a member of Congress, you could know that the United States is going to benefit from or be hurt by something, and maybe owning or not owning treasuries would be a good idea. Would that be accurate?
That's exactly right. And the law for disclosing stocks and other investments is very specific on what types of securities you must disclose, and treasuries is specifically there for that reason you just stated.
In many cases, Eric, from what I understand, the members of Congress who have violated this law have done so inadvertently, according to them, as Dan Bishop did. Members of Congress are busy. They're in Washington. They're in their local districts. They're juggling a lot of things all at once. And of course, they have to factor in their personal lives. If you fail to report something like this, Could it be just because you are busy? Is that a legitimate excuse, or is this an example of, you know, it's not a big deal and we're exercising privilege here?
Well, yes and no. As Kendrick said earlier, they are well trained on this. And there are other things that they have to report. So, you know, it would seem highly likely that almost all of them set up some type of routine in their office for monitoring and doing this reporting. It's not unfamiliar to them. They have to report, you know, quarterly to the Federal Election Commission on their fundraising, and there's similar types of processes and fines if they don't do that. So I was actually somewhat impressed by Representative Bishop's admission that he didn't blame it on his staff, which is kind of what I would have expected him to do, to say, oh, well, the staff is in charge of this reporting and they didn't do it. So, you know, whether because this is personal financial information that many of them don't want to share with staff and therefore do it themselves, where he figured it was worse to be seen as blaming it on his staff rather than taking responsibility for it. I don't know, but you know, that intrigued me about his response to this.
So members of Congress, Alexandria, have a 45-day window to report this. That seems like an awfully long time in an electronic age when you push a button and trade stocks instantly. I don't know why the report can't be filed at the same time instantly. But if you comply with this and report in a timely fashion, as is ordered by the law, is any further action taken? Because just because you report it doesn't mean you're not benefiting from some sort of insider trading or inside knowledge.
Very true. So the benefit of, you know, of course, with complying with the law is that it provides public trust. That's the main reason behind this. But, you know, if you follow the rules, you submit on time, you absolutely could be revealing that you have conflicts of interest. So we've seen in the past where a member of Congress might be on a specific committee that and they might be investing in stock that would be related to those activities. So that's what those that can reveal. So you might follow the rules, but it can reveal conflicts of interest, and that's a problem.
If you're a smart investor, you have a diversified portfolio, and it is not beyond the realm of understanding that you would have a portion of that portfolio in treasury notes. It seems a safe place to park money. $5 million is a lot, but I don't know his net worth, so he may have an enormous portfolio, and that would be a legitimate amount of money to put in treasuries. But is there any indication that he made that decision based on knowledge that he and maybe other members of Congress have that we don't?
I would say at this time, there's not knowledge that we have that he made that based on insider trading. Again, there is the concept of public trust and the lack thereof when these violations do occur, and there's the potential appearance. But at this point, we don't have any proof necessarily that he had insider information.
So, Kedrick, as Alexandria reported on this story, Congressman Bishop and others have said that they have regretted the errors they made when it comes to complying with this law. But his team didn't say if he would be liable to pay the fine. The fine is $200. So I have two questions. Why would the fine be optional? And why would it be so low? $200 on what may have been a $5 million investment seems like that's a penny in your pocket.
Yeah. So the reason why the fine is so low is because it's based on a law created in 1970s, right after Watergate. And that fee for violating the law hasn't changed since then. And the discretion is with the ethics committee on whether or not they will actually levy that fine against a lawmaker who violated the rule. So a lot of ifs there with whether there are any consequences for failure to report on time.
And a lot of times the ethics committee does, in fact, choose to waive the $200 fine. Does that display an understanding of ethics by the ethics committee?
Well, the ethics committee, at least for the House and the Senate, they both have the reputation of being there in a way that they see the lawmakers as their clients. So they're performing client services, and they want to focus more on being friendly with the lawmakers than being forceful with enforcement. So it doesn't really show an appetite to show real consequences for violations.
So, Eric, we're having this conversation in the general populace now about accountability on the part of a lot of government officials. They seem to skirt by on very little accountability. The fine is so incredibly low. Is that how it is regarded by members of Congress, as laughable and also so weak that it makes violating this law worth it? It doesn't matter.
Well, I'd say for them, it's probably not the financial consequence that would be meaningful anyway. Even if the financial consequence would be higher, it'd be the electoral risk. So that requires that violations be made public, that there is a media reporting on this, that there are competitive challengers who have the resources to communicate that criticism to the public. And with many districts just being so lopsided for one political party, there isn't much threat of electoral consequence. And, you know, even if they were fined, if they could get reelected anyway, I think that would be a risk that many of them would see as worth taking.
I mean, it may not matter. Many of these instances may be genuine oversights, genuine mistakes for which they are genuinely sorry, and they confess to it, and they either pay the fine or they're not fined, but they move on. But you reported recently, Alexandria, that 5 members of Congress in mid-March, this does matter, dumped their personal stock in the now-defunct First Republic Bank, which saved them potentially thousands, possibly tens of thousands of dollars in losses. How soon after those stock trades did that bank fail?
Yeah, it was just a month later. So the 5 members of Congress that dumped their stocks did so in mid-March, and that was when First Republic Bank's credit rating started to erode, the stock price tumbled, and then by April, the bank had faltered and was seized. So it fell even more. And so that certainly, by dumping the stocks a month earlier, saved them further losses.
So leaders of some of the other banks that got themselves in trouble, I think Silicon Valley Bank was in a congressional hearing just yesterday, and he was taken to the whipping post by Senator Kennedy. I think that's who was taking him to the whipping post. And Kennedy was making very valid points about, you made stupid decisions. You put all of your eggs in one basket. While on the other side of the hall, there are people maybe who knew that with the other bank, the First Republic Bank, and got the heck out. Is there any evidence that they knew that bank was going down?
So we don't necessarily have proof that they acted on insider information, but Congress, of course, was being informed and making decisions about potential bailouts with banks. So there is potential evidence that they at least had information that the bank was faltering, and that could potentially have influenced their decision to dump their stock.
Kendrick, I only have 45 seconds, but put that into some sort of context. How bad is this?
It's really bad, because you have these allegations that just sit out there that put a cloud not only on these people who are trading these bank stocks, but also the ones who may do an innocent mistake, but they all fall in the same bucket, where the public just loses trust in stock trading with Congress.
Kedrick Payne is Vice President, General Counsel, and Senior Director of Ethics for the Campaign Legal Center. He's with us along with Alexandria Jacobson, reporter for Raw Story. He's done extensive reporting on this. And Dr. Eric Heberling, Professor of Political Science at UNC Charlotte. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaOfSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Stock Act, potential violations of it, what that means for the ethical nature of our members of Congress, with Alexandria Jacobson from Raw Story, Kedrick Payne from the Campaign Legal Center, an ethics expert, and Dr. Eric Heberle, professor of political science at UNC Charlotte. There have been other violations, Alexandria, that you have reported on by members of Congress and members of their families, which were similar to Dan Bishop's. You've reported on Democrat Seth Moulton of Massachusetts and his failure to disclose his wife's selling of $100,000 worth of stock. Virginia Democrat Jerry Connolly was late disclosing a personal sale of stock. Delaware Democratic Senator Tom Carper was in the same boat. In fact, you say that during the 177th Congress from 2021 to 2022, at least 78 members of Congress on both sides of the aisle violated the Stock Act. No penalties? No repercussions?
And $200 fines for the folks that have violated the Stock Act. So Auditor-in-Chief Dave Leventhal reported on the folks that you just mentioned that have violated the Stock Act. I myself have, I'm currently investigating even more potential violations right now. But at most, it's a $200 fine that's been implemented.
And as we've seen, members of the Supreme Court don't appear to be immune to lapses of ethics or ethical judgment, but there are no rules governing their conduct in the high court. From an ethical, Kedrick, an ethical legal point of view, have we reached an inflection point where too many of these ethical lapses have come out. The public knows about it now, and they're angry about it. They don't see it as fair, and we're losing trust in government officials elected or appointed. Have we reached an inflection point where something has to be done to fix this?
Yes, I think so. I think we are reaching a point where ethics just keeps coming up as an issue in Congress and with the court, that the public just wants to see stronger laws, more enforcement, and they want to see a change. Now, there's this nuance when it comes to Supreme Court and ethics and with judges owning stocks, where they have the option to recuse. So there's an easy answer where those judges can simply recuse from cases that involve companies in which they have investments. However,
even but they don't they, have to. They don't have to do it. That's a choice, correct?
That's true, because there's no way to truly enforce it with the Supreme Court. With the lower courts, there's a way. But that's true. It's hard to enforce it.
Wow. Eric Alexandria says that multiple news outlets, including NPR and The New York Times, have documented what she describes as, quote, rampant financial conflicts of interest among dozens of members of Congress. Why isn't this a bigger deal?
Well, it's a big issue because members of Congress write the laws that affect these industries and thus can write the law potentially in ways that benefit their own stock portfolio by writing the laws in ways that benefit the type of companies that they hold investments in. It's the same concern that people have about the campaign contributions that they get from industries that are governed by the committees that they sit on. So there's always going to be some type of inherent conflict of interest there. I think what some reformers are pushing and some members of Congress have proposed is to ban members from holding individual stocks that would create less incentive to make decisions that would affect their own investments.
When you look at these funds
or things like that.
When you look at not following the Stock Act, when you look at these ethical lapses, when you look at campaign finance laws and Citizens United and gerrymandering around the country, are we eating our democracy alive, Eric?
Well, there's always been a distrust that politicians are putting their own personal self-interest above the public interest. And there's no real way to get around that. I think what these type of laws try to get at is to try to say, all right, well, we understand that you're going to do things for your electoral self-interest, but we don't want you kind of personally benefiting in a financial way from your public office. That in public office, you're there to serve the public. We understand that your career advancement interests are going to be part of that package, but your personal financial well-being should not be part of that well-being. Or that acting on self-interest, that we pay you for the job you do, that's your remuneration for public service, not the extra amount you can extract from donors or from taking advantage of the fact that you're making the rules that affect the economic interests of these corporations.
I think dealing with politicians is rubbing off on you, because I don't think you answered my question. My question is, are we killing ourselves with all these things that seem to be rotting at our very core? Are we killing the democracy? Do we have to do a wholesale fix of a lot of things?
I think where I agree with the premise of your question is that people become so cynical that rather than forcing the issue to saying, yes, we want reform, they throw up their hands and say, oh, there's nothing we can do about it, or each side is equally bad. And rather than holding people accountable when they are engaging in improper behavior, they just shrug their shoulders and say that's kind of the nature of the world, instead of advocating for reform.
So Kedrick Alexandria, who did all this reporting, so I have to quote her own articles here. She quotes Dylan Hettler-Gaudet, senior government affairs manager with the Project on Government Oversight, a nonpartisan watchdog group, as saying that all these recent violations of the Stock Act speak to a larger issue pervading Congress, that, quote, they just don't really take their ethics very seriously. Would you agree, and has this always been a problem?
There's plenty of evidence to support that statement. When you look at the clear ethical violations or the allegations of ethical violations and no enforcement by the House or the Senate Ethics Committee, or very little enforcement such that these things seem unresolved for the public, I think that it does look like we have an ethics issue, and it has existed throughout our government, but there's always been an evolution of more ethics laws, stronger ethics laws that address the problem at that time, and then they have to be revised. So Watergate was the big turning point for us. Now it's time for more laws.
Todd on Facebook, one of our listeners, writes, "This should be easy. Simply ban training while they're members of Congress, and if they or family members get caught cheating, take away their profits and put them in jail for 6 months." Well, Alexandria, you report that a number of congresspeople on both sides of the political divide want to ban themselves and their colleagues from trading stocks altogether. Are any of them among those who have violated the Stock Act, or is this in response to colleagues who have, and is there any chance that this will pass?
So there is hope. There is legislation both in the House and the Senate that is pushing for a congressional stock trading ban. So there's several legislations. So in pairings of seemingly politicians that would probably never come together on other topics. So for example, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Representative Matt Gaetz, they've come together.
Well, how did that happen?
Yes. So so this is something that I think people on both sides of the aisle, as they see these repeated infractions and how pervasive of a problem this is, people have come together to try to push for the congressional stock ban. So they've pushed for a ban conflicted trading act. In the Senate, there's the Ethics Act that would require Congress people to put their investments into a blind trust. So there was an opportunity potentially this legislation has been going on for a couple years. There was a potential opportunity for legislation to be voted on last year, but it never made it to the House floor. So there's been a renewed push for new legislation to eventually get a vote.
Eric, these people are they have lives, they have retirements to look forward to. They have to invest in order to have sufficient money to retire, unlike any normal human being. And they have extra expenses that we don't have because they have to live in two cities, and Washington ain't cheap. Would it be fair to ban members of Congress from making legitimate investment opportunities, or to force them to put all of their investments into a blind trust over which they have no control while they stay in Congress? Would that limit the field of possible candidates who might be good members of Congress, but they don't want to do that?
It could. I would think that the argument that they would make against these type of bans is that it's selecting out particular people from making economic decisions that everybody else can't make. So business people can still decide to trade in stocks and pad their retirement incomes in that way. But they, just because they're politicians, would be limited from doing so.
Would it be fair, because this is not just a problem with the Congress, the legislative branch. This is a problem with the executive branch, and it's a problem with the judicial branch, as we are coming to learn, Kedrick. Would it be fair to mandate that members of Congress, as well as the president, the members of the Supreme Court, put all of their investments into a blind trust? Would that be good for the country?
I'm a little torn with applying the same law across all three branches because they are different. And Campaign Legal Center has filed complaints against stock trading with the agency officials, but I don't think agency officials need to be banned from owning stock. I do think the existing law that would force them to be recused from decisions involving those stocks could work. So I think we need stronger laws for judges and for agency officials, but when it comes to stock trading, but it doesn't have to be the same law across the board.
Well, this, as I said, this is not just happening in Congress. The Wall Street Journal, in a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigation, reports stock trading is rampant in the executive branch across 50 agencies, from Commerce to Treasury, you name it. More than 2,600 officials in the executive branch reported stock investments in companies while those companies were lobbying their agencies for favorable policies during both Republican and Democratic administrations. This seems like a gigantic red flag. Why hasn't the public demanded this stop?
I don't know if the public is, they're following it more and more, and they're seeing it. And we file complaints against these agencies where there are clear bans, for example, the FCC, that those officials should not own stock in agency that in companies that appear before them. But the ethics officials at those agencies are not enforcing those rules. If they would just enforce the rules as they currently exist, then the public could have more confidence that there are not conflicts of interest at the agencies as well as in the courts.
I don't know, Alexander, if you can answer this question, but I'll ask it anyway. If you can't, you can't. But because you've done so much reporting on this and so much investigation in this, how much of an impact do you think, or do you have any evidence of, that this is having an impact on the country, on how we treat certain companies, on the policies that we make, either in the executive branch or in the legislative branch?
I think the argument certainly could be made that when you see members of Congress that have committee appointments and then investments in, you know, government contractors that might be getting billion-dollar contracts, that there's certainly a concern of conflict of interest, and that might be influencing in their decisions. So I think, and just overall, there's just the broad, as we've talked about many times, is the broad public perception of lack of trust in government. When we see types of these types of conflicts of interest.
So we just spoke, you just spoke a moment ago about some efforts being made in Congress to pass additional rules that would maybe restrict this even further. There is something called the Ending Trading and Holdings in Congressional Stocks, or cleverly titled the Ethics Act, that's been a bipartisan, bicameral piece of legislation. Is that what you were talking about, or is this something else altogether?
So I mentioned that's the in the Senate, that is one act that's being proposed, the Ban Conflicting Trading Act, that's in the House. I also wanted to briefly point out the stock bans that are proposed and actually the current Stock Act, mutual funds, Congress members can keep mutual fund accounts. So they don't have to have, you know, no retirement savings or anything like that. That is a consideration. So there's been a proposal of a Stock Act 2.0 in past years as well that came out of the Senate that would extend beyond Congress, as you've mentioned, to potentially Supreme Court justices, the executive branch in regards to a stock trade as well. So there's a lot of legislation out there and it just needs to some of it just needs to get to the floor for an actual vote.
And you've said, Kedrick, that we do need more restrictive rules on stock trading. And do any of the bills that we've been talking about that are floating around Congress, do they do the trick?
They do the trick. And for the public who may be confused with all these different acronyms and different laws, the key is just to look and hear for the law that bans not only the stock trading of the official, but also their spouse and dependent children. Therefore, you don't have an easy loophole. And also the options that have a blind trust component, because that takes away the potential for individual stock ownership to cause conflicts of interest.
And you've also called for stronger enforcement of existing rules and perhaps stronger penalties. What should those penalties be to make a difference?
Well, clearly, if we simply updated the $200 violation penalty from 1978 to today's inflation adjusted price, you would have a significant penalty that would hopefully make people think twice before violating the rule. But you also just need to have better examples of what happens when someone violates the rule.
And Eric, very quickly, because I'm short on time, we've already spoken about how congressional ethics committees generally give Congress members a pass. Should all possible legal and ethical violations by members of Congress, the executive branch, the judicial branch, go to some sort of outside adjudicating organization or to the Justice Department itself?
Yeah, then you'd avoid the perceptions of politicians protecting one another. There would be greater confidence, I think, that how they evaluated and whatever penalties were proposed were actually legitimate rather than the fox guarding the hen house.
Dr. Eric Heberling is professor of political science at UNC Charlotte. He joined us along with Kedrick Payne, vice president general counsel of the Campaign Legal Center, and Alexandria Jacobson with Raw Story. Thank you all for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producer is Gabe Altieri. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.